Mac DeMarco. Thank you so much for tuning in.
Welcome to For the Record, our bi-weekly show in which we take one recently released album and talk about it in depth. You can listen to us every other Thursday at 9:30 a.m. on BFF.fm or subscribe to the podcast at ForTheRecordPodcast.com. This week we're talking about the self-titled album from The Fourth Wanderers, which starts out like this.
Welcome to Listen Local. My name is Julian Mark, and I'm here with Lydia Chavez. Hi, Lydia.
Good morning.
And Joe Eskenazi.
Good morning.
Well, guys, what are we talking about today? We're down the stretch in the mayor's race. What do you think?
I mean, nobody knows what's going to happen. I mean, I talk to all the campaigns. They don't know what's going to happen.
What do you mean by that, Joe?
It's very hard to predict the outcome of a ranked choice voting election where you know, I've gone on record that, you know, you have to be wary of these polls, but the one thing that's consistent is no one really cracks 30-35%. So there's a lot of second and third place votes to make up, so it's very hard to predict how that's going to fall.
So if not predicting who might win this very close election, maybe we can talk about just what the pros and cons of each candidate. I mean, what, you know, who would be good for what? Who would, you know, who would be perhaps the best all around to be in the seat in room 200.
Is this for me, or you want to go?
I think
no, because what interests me here is they all want to, you know, solve homelessness. They all want to build more houses. But what is different here? And I think in a sense, what is different is really their records. But no one seems to really be looking at their records. I mean, we just talked to someone who's going to vote for London Breed, because she'll do more for housing, which if you look at the records, it just doesn't indicate that. So what is it about? Is it the story of London Breed? The way in which people are voting interests me in an election like this.
What do you think is going to be the decider here? I mean, the average voter doesn't, you know, this deep dive into their records. They see their pictures a lot. They maybe know their names. You know, a lot of people are just kind of, you know, kind of going on the big sort of, you know, news markers, like the Board of Supervisors vote that out to Breed. And, yeah, what is going to be sort of the decider here, if not their records, if not sort of this big intellectual task that it takes to kind of, you know, make an assessment like this?
It's really hard to say. You know, a campaign is based upon, you know, the aura of leadership. And that is something that I feel that both London Breed and Jane Kim are more energetic than Mark Leno. I think the fact that he's known as like a calm and measured and analytical person, these are all things you probably would want in a leader, but it you know, he's not a fiery stump speech kind of guy. I talk to a fair amount of people that's like, well, you know, he's very subdued in the debates, etc. And, you know, I get that. You know, Mark Leno is not a revivalist preacher. But, you know, I mean, we can look at his record and we can judge him for good or ill. And we could do the same with both London Breed and Jane Kim. I think both London Breed or Jane Kim would make San Francisco feel good about itself as the self-styled capital of the resistance. I could see a lot of people being very pleased with London Breed telling Donald Trump to go sit and spin. And I could see, you know, much the same from Jane Kim, who's actually made that an overt part of her campaign.
So if you're judging him on those two, but there is a difference between the two, obviously. I mean, I think, in the eyes...
Respectfully, the people who say that they're not all that different aren't looking at this through the right gauge. And this is, you know, I'm workshopping the material for the column I'll write for you all later today. But it's San Francisco politics is complicated, but it's even more complicated if you refuse to acknowledge how it works. And looking at it through an ideological lens is not going to get you very much. Everybody's a Democrat. Everybody brings their own bags. You know, everybody brings their own Nalgene bottle of water. You know, like we agree on these things. You don't have big wedge issues on the quote unquote liberal conservative issues here that you would in other parts of the country. And so the differences in San Francisco are going to be identity based. A lot of people are going to vote for a woman. A lot of people are going to vote for a gay man, etc. Or they're going to be municipal. And municipal differences are not necessarily something that you can translate into, you know, capital D Democrat issues. You know, municipal differences are, you know, are development and transportation and prioritization of budgeting. You know, that's what differentiates people in this city.
But wait a minute. Don't you think, I mean, interesting the idea that there are no wedge issues here, but in some respects, the YIMBY movement has made housing a wedge issue. It's the way in which you build housing, how fast you build housing. Do you have state control of building housing or local control of housing? In a way, they kind of did manage to make that a bit of a wedge issue.
I think that, you know, I mean, the YIMBY movement may yet do lots, but they haven't done anything yet other than make it into a conversation. And I think that, you know, if you're on the internet a lot, their influence to me seems overstated. I think that they bring up a lot of good points, but I think that... it hasn't come to pass yet in so far as how things actually get done in the city.
But it definitely did in the election, which is what a wage issue is about in terms of Jane Kim's sort of statements on the West Side.
Yeah.
But the fact of the matter is that like SB 827, I mean, yes, but SB 827 wasn't going to pass, you know, so this became,
but they
this
made
became,
it, pardon me, but they made it feel like it might have gone somewhere. I mean, they influenced the sort of the, you know, the consciousness that it could, that it would not die at committee and in fact might even pass through the Senate floor.
Yeah, but I mean, what we're looking at here is, how can I say, that's a wedge issue, but it has nothing to do with your ideology. It's not, you know, Jane Kim is no, this is not how liberal you are. This is a land use issue.
Yeah, but what I'm saying, it mm-hmm. does have to do with the way in which people vote and wedge issues are.
It does, when you look at things through an ideological construct, that's not going to get in there. That's a municipal issue.
Mm-hmm.
You know, your arguments about ideology don't have to do with your arguments on abortion or single payer health care or all the other ideological issues that divide the country. It's a land use issue. It's a municipal issue. You know, you can have arguments about how we should build housing the same way as how we should fund transit. And various, and you know, and money to parks or homeless issues, right? Those aren't ideological issues; those are municipal issues. So, I mean, yes, first of all, SBA 27 is an interesting thing to bring up because for a lot of people, this non-existent piece of legislation has become a bellwether on how to hand on whom to vote for in the election. That's weird. You know?
Well, and so there you have it. You know, there you have, you know, this, you know, this, their influence and making housing. I mean, you go to, you know, you sit down in almost any small meeting, with a mayoral candidate or not, or, and most, you will ask many of the people in the room, what is the most important issue to you? Even if they're, you know, associated with the YIMBY movement or not, they're going to say housing. I mean, whether or not the, you know, housing is, you know, a creation of the YIMBYs or an issue created by the YIMBYs, I don't think it really is. I think it's, you know, it is the story of San Francisco at this moment.
I think
that they
are a symptom, not the cause. And, you know, I think, again, we if you're a student of San Francisco history, the political septic tank in this city is full of movements that came and went. We'll see where they go. They have altered the conversation, but nothing's gotten built yet. So, you know, they've, you know, the one thing they've built are lots of national profiles in big newspapers. And well, so, like, we'll see about this, right?
Right.
We'll see. But, you know, nothing's happened yet.
Yeah, but let's move it back to the candidates. I mean, you know, if this is turned into an election about personalities and perhaps, you know, an election about housing, you know, what candidates, you know, have actually done the most in the way of housing?
Well, it's a loaded question. You know, very little housing has been built in District 5, which is London's district. But, you know, there's not a lot of places where under city rules you can do that with ease. You know, in Jane's district, you know, that's where the majority of housing gets built in San Francisco. That's how things are set up. Mark Leno has very distinct views on housing because he's the father of inclusionary housing in San Francisco. And all of the candidates want to build at least 5,000 units a year. A mayor can't just snap his or her fingers and do that. And, you know, also, like, lurking underneath the ground is that, you know, all of the in-the-pipeline units that we have planned, the vast plurality of them were supposed to be at Hunters Point Shipyard. When's that going to happen? Mm. That land is irradiated. Mm. You know, the more that you look into it, the worse it's going to get. And so, you know, you have a huge hole in your plans. And every mayoral candidate has to acknowledge that. Not only is it, you know, not only was it incredibly, you know, racist and awful and, you know, and terrible behavior for the people who lived there for generations, but it that's where you were going to build most of your housing, and now you can't, at least not in the short term. And so they all have to acknowledge that, and they have to come up with solutions.
So do you think, just now, right before the election, do you think the people who engineered getting Lyndon Reed off as president of the board now regret that in any way?
I don't think so. I think that it was a decision between definitely losing or possibly losing.
Mm-hmm.
And I think that it's naive or partisan to say otherwise.
Mm-hmm.
I think that the people I've talked to resent the notion. It's been sold that she was ousted. That is a loaded term, too. If Lyndon had 6 votes, she would be the mayor. She didn't have 6 votes. The whole notion that the acting mayor is supposed to stay upon and be mayor is fallacious. David Chu never tried to hold on to the job, and he didn't delay the vote for Ed Lee, ultimately,
mm-hmm.
6 weeks, as London's team did. The fact that Ed Lee died instead of Gavin going off to Sacramento is not really material here. The whole purpose was to get the next mayor into the chair.
Mm-hmm.
So, you know, I've talked to folks, you know, I've not talked to London about this, but, you know, the question comes as to whether she really wanted to be interim mayor as Mark Farrell is now, because there's no job security there. If she were to lose the June 5th election, she would be out of government. You know, the more desirable outcome is to be acting mayor, where you're both board president and mayor for 6 months. And if you lose on June 5th, then you go back to being Board of Supervisors president and supervisor. But, you know, I think anybody who's saying that this is how things should have been, that's just not good government.
No, it's not. But, it, you know, it is something that comes up with voters. I mean, voters will say...
Voters feel she was wronged. But you know what?
Voters are important at this point.
Yes, very smart voters, in fact, think, you know, even feel that she was wrong.
Voters feel she was wrong, but you know what? That's politics. That's politics. You know, that they voted her out. You know, that's politics.
But is that kind of politics hurting who they might have liked to have seen become mayor?
Possibly, but, you know, leaving her in would have hurt as well. It was not a tenable situation. And, you know, I don't think it was a coincidence that, you know, that Team London, you know, had a lot of loaded statements about how unwise it would be to vote a African-American woman out of office at this time. That was, that was a barricade set up to make the proposed move as painful as possible, and that did happen. You know, in essence, the liberal wing of the board shot the hostage, we can talk about that. You know, I don't think that they debate for a second that it was the right move to do, because, you know, everything carries risks. But had London Breed been acting mayor, I think that she would win this thing going away. I think the notion that we'd be heaping it upon her that there's feces and needles and whatnot in the street is also incredibly naive. Mm-hmm. London Breed is a smart and savvy politician, and she'd be the first one out there with a hard hat and umbrella rubber gloves, and that issue would have been mitigated in a second. You know, it's almost dishonest to say that she'd be weighed down by the city's problems, because, you know, the status quo didn't start in January. Right. The status quo started a long time ago. So, I think London Breed was very good at the artifice of being mayor. Mm-hmm. You know, and I think she's an attractive candidate, and I think that, you know, I think that she has a lot of character, and she's very charismatic, and I think people, are affected by that.
Now, you know, going up against, you know, the sort of image, the persona of London Breed, which I, you know, even admit is extremely attractive, you know, especially to somebody who hasn't been, you know, following this election closely. The question is, too, is will, you know, this Mark Leno, Jane Kim alliance actually work?
Absolutely. The question is, will it work enough? There's no other way. There was no other way. And, you know, I'll say it again. The Chronicle editorial decrying them for doing in ranked choice voting what ranked choice voting does was bizarre and showed a total lack of understanding of the system.
What did it say?
It said they were gaming the system.
Yeah.
You know, gaming the system implies that they were cheating. But, like, that's what you do in ranked choice voting. That's what happens in every supervisor's race. That's what happened in every mayoral election since we've had it, except we haven't had contested elections. This is a contested election, you know, and it was bizarre to me that within two paragraphs it said this is unprecedented, and the same thing happened in Oakland, you know, a couple of years
ago.
Well,
explain that. I mean, what does that do?
Ranked choice voting, people get so hung up on ranked choice voting. Now, ranked choice voting gets to be very complicated when you're tallying up the votes. It's not very complicated when you're voting. You vote for a 1, a 2, and a 3. You can't vote for the same person 3 times. You know, this is very simple stuff, you know. You vote for, I mean, you can come up with strategies as to whom you wish to vote for in what order. And in this case, it will matter. You know, I think it would be very difficult for Mark Leno to come from third place as opposed to second, or Jane Kim from third place as opposed to second. But, you know, I anticipate London Breed will get more first place votes than anyone. I think that's a safe assumption. The question is, will the second and third place votes from the vanquished candidates as they are eliminated raise up the second place candidate to win? Well, and specifically, if Mark is in second place, will he get enough of Jane's second place votes when she's eliminated out of third place to push him past London Breed? If Jane is in second, same question. If they execute this well, one of them will be mayor. And if they don't, London Breed will be mayor.
Do you have
what does executing it well mean? Just getting the word
you
out?
You have to get a goodly percentage of the other's votes, and you have to counter. You have to get people thinking what you want them to do, and that's hard. You know, it's going to be hard. I believe that in Oakland, Gene Kwan got something like 2/3 of Rebecca Kaplan's second place votes, and that was much more organized than this. Yeah. And you have a much more divisive, polarizing first place figure who also ran a dumber race. Don Prada decided that ranked choice voting was beneath him, and he ran a traditional race, which is, you know, I mean, you can't show up and play rugby when it's a football game. You will lose.
Mm-hmm. Let's go to District 8. Mm-hmm. Let's spend a little time and just say a little bit about the candidates and who they are and what we're getting with each one.
Well, you have Jeff Sheehy, who's the incumbent, who was appointed by Ed Lee when Scott Wiener was elevated to state senate. And you have Raphael Mandelman, who is an urban land use attorney. He's on the City College Board. He's been on a number of boards around the city, and he also ran against Scott Wiener in 2010. What are you getting with each of them? It's a bit difficult, you know. Raphael is definitely the more progressive candidate, but, you know, this is District 8 that has never elected a progressive candidate, so he... I'd say he is not going to cotton himself to that qualification. You know, I moderated a debate between the two of them yesterday for the Eureka Valley Neighbors Association. And, you know, Raphael didn't want to run out there and say he was the progressive candidate. He didn't want to embrace the coalition of homelessness, standards on homelessness. Mm-hmm. And, you know, he wasn't saying, yeah, build a navigation center here. Yeah, put a needle injection site here. So they each had a fairly nuanced take on many of the issues. There were a few points of extreme difference.
Where?
For one thing, Jeff Sheehy is not backing down from his endorsement of Prop H, which is the Police Officers Association writing their own use guidelines for tasers. Even though the police commission has since made plans, and so this would supersede the civilian oversight of the police commission and the chief, for that matter, who may or may not become the LAPD chief as soon as today.
So if it's your day for voters, that makes him look tough on crime or tougher on crime or supportive of the police? So.
The question here is, like, is it more valuable to mm-hmm. be the preferred candidate of the POA or is that is it more valuable for District 8 voters to be, you know, supportive of civilian oversight of police? That's whether or not that's the calculus, that's the calculus.
So, but voters are unlikely to see it like that. Don't you think voters are likely
voters,
to see it
voters
as
are not,
the police? Or...
I think that Prop H is going to win because voters aren't going to realize what's going on.
Yeah.
I think that you have to really research it to understand that the POA wrote its own safety recommendations. They are, you know, a much more lenient, a much more permissive of tasers than what the police commission would have wanted. I think the term what is the term resistive as opposed to combative or something like that?
Violently resisting.
Well, yeah, in the way as it's written could be interpreted as like I don't want to do it, you know, or like mm-hmm. I'm just going to grab on this pole and I'm not going to let go, or you know, verbally telling you I'm going to kill you, I'm going to get you, that kind of thing. I mean, as I walked out of the debate yesterday, there was police arresting a homeless man and a homeless man's wife, and it was like a signature issue of San Francisco. He had been waving a pole around or something like that. People felt threatened. He wasn't threatening at the time that they came. Could they have tased this man under the rules for what he was doing? He was resisting. He wasn't violent. Yes, it looked like they could have. So, you know, it comes down to it. If you have a scenario where the union has basically... no union should write its own safety rules, right, especially in the public safety business. And if you have a scenario where mentally ill homeless people are more likely to be tased for doing nonviolent but resistive things, that's a problem. You know,
where does Mandelman stand on Prop H?
I think that Mandelman didn't want the police to get tasers, but that's neither here nor there at this point. Mm. I think he's definitely against it, as is every elected official in San Francisco other than Scott Wiener and Jeff Sheehy.
So, any other differences between the two?
Let me think back here. I have it all written down. There are a few. I mean, I will go over it. A lot of it also is just... Jeff has this aura of independence, and I think mm-hmm. it's well-earned. But, mm-hmm. you know, independence could also come across as being erratic.
Mm-hmm.
And so I think that Raphael is... He's more predictable for good or ill.
Hmm.
I think that you, when you vote for him, you know more what you are going to get,
mm-hmm.
you know, and I'm going to have to go back and try and find more of the cleaved differences between the two.
I've seen the two of them speak and, you know, just really not knowing much about District 8 and District 8 voters, I personally found Mandelman to be a little bit more of an excitable speaker.
Hmm.
He held audiences just, you know, a little bit better. Sheehy tends to drone on a little bit, you know.
Sheehy doesn't stay on point.
And yeah.
That's, you know, he's not a professional politician. That's part of it, you know. That's something. Sheehy refused to tell me who he was voting for.
Hmm. And
Mandelman was very quick. I've endorsed Mark Leno since forever, right? you know, but Sheehy refused to say who he was voting for. Refused mm-hmm. to say. He got people catcalled him from the crowd. He it didn't affect him.
Mm.
You know, who are you voting for? He seemed to have an issue with the fact that he seemed to be, you know, alluding to the fact that Mark Leno doesn't have funding sources lined up in his homeless plan. You know, and I've talked to him about that, and he, you know, that's not good. That's not ideal. He has ways around it. I don't know if that's valid. London has funding sources lined up in her homeless plan. They're inadequate, but at least she has some. But, you know, he refused to make any kind of endorsements that way. That's interesting. You know, Jeff obviously feels like he was hung out to dry by London's people. I don't know if that's affected who he's going to vote for.
Mm-hmm. Would the district 8 voter be for one or the other, so that announcing who you're for could damage you with the majority of the voters there? Do you think they're London breed?
I mean, they elected Mark Leno twice.
Yeah. Yeah.
I mean, they elected this gay man twice. You know, in a district that's still predominantly gay. So, like, Mark Leno would be a safe choice, but you know, like, that would certainly, you know, I mean, this election has citywide ramifications, and you know, I think that Jeff Sheehy is. Has certainly gotten himself burned pretty good for some of the stuff he's done, some of the stances he's taken. So I think he's stuck in this one, and you know that's his call. You know, I can't demand to know who he voted for. We can look and see who he's endorsed, though. He's listed as endorsing London on her page,
right?
Yeah. You know, so we'll see.
Well, that should do it for Mission Local. I hope you all have a fun time voting.
We only get half an hour.
Yeah, we only have half an hour, unfortunately. I hope you all have a fun time on election day. I hope you found this little guide useful for both the District 8 and the mayoral races. Have fun voting.